السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Once again, ahlan wa sahlan wa marhaban bikum to this edition of the Coffee Express, coming to you live and exclusively from the studios of Markaz Sahaba Online, Sawtu Ahli Sunnah wal Jama'a in Durban, South Africa, on this day, the 18th of Rajab, 1446, corresponding with the Gregorian date, the 18th of January, 2025. Alhamdulillah, we just completed our discussion about those very small minority of good Jews who are mentioned in the Holy Quran. Now, inshallah, we are going to cross over to Brother Ahmed Parak, inshallah, he will discuss any new issues regarding kafan and dafan, and all the new issues, you know, in the political scene in this city of Durban in South Africa. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Brother Ahmed Parak.
Walaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Malana. It is nice to be back. For Alan and Salam to all our radio listeners, I've been away for a few weeks. I have got the flu, but I will do my utmost best, but I'm dedication, but alhamdulillah, I'm ready to enroll this morning, inshallah, to give you whatever update the community is waiting for. Inshallah, we'll be able to give them the update, Malala.
Let's start with any new developments regarding the kafan and dafan. As we know, that there is a problem with particularly non-Muslims, you know, the shortage of burial space in this municipality of Itikweni, so much so that, as we know, that, you know, our indigenous people, the Zulus and the Khoisa, they have just as much respect for the deceased as we have. Hence, they also don't believe in cremating the deceased. You know, is this also affecting our Muslim community? Because there was a time there was talk about shortage of space, particularly during the COVID time.
Jimalana, first and foremost, you know, the people are still asking me what is the story with the X-ray machines. So I just want to give them the update on that. Malana, we are at a very, very advanced stage. There is two top attorneys, advocates and attorneys in the province are doing the research, because the Justice Department wants, we need to change the act from the Justice Department. So once we have done that, then only they will be able to consider our request. So that will take another couple of months or so, because it has to be drawn properly. Then it will go to Parliament. We're going to submit it through Parliament to change the act, put this machine to work in South Africa. So that is the only grey area that is left. I've done everything else. They're more or less happy. This is the only thing that the stumbling block has come. So inshallah, I'm on top of it. I've engaged our top legal attorneys in the province here. They are prepared to do it, because it didn't work. They're prepared to do it free of charge. So that's number one. As far as we are concerned in the Muslim cemeteries, alhamdulillah, over the years, that is one of the reasons why Islamic Burial Council was formed, and we took over all the Muslim cemetery within the Itikweni municipality. And at that time, when we were taking over from the council, you know, the elders and all came to me. He says, Ahmed Parak, what are you doing with this organization? Because the council is doing a good job. Why do we have to pay staff, get a vehicle, maintain, pay electricity, water, light, pay all these fees, and you need a fully-fledged team to maintain this cemetery? Well, if we did not take it, in 2001, what could have happened was, at that time, take one scenario. If you take Red Hill Cemetery, we got 1,000 graves there. At that time, there was only about less than 100 buried there from the 1,000. What they wanted to do is they wanted to take half the cemetery away for the non-Muslim. By taking it over, now we got all these cemeteries, although it's costing us for maintenance, but the money comes from the community. What a big difference it has made. At that time, we took about 8, now we got about like 14 cemeteries. Alhamdulillah. By taking it over, we're maintaining it ourselves. We're in control of our own destiny. We're not relying on the municipality or anything, because the municipality don't give us anything, not even 1 cent. You look at our cemetery compared to the non-Muslim cemetery, the cemetery they maintain. It's like chalk and cheese. Ours is like a Mercedes-Benz compared to theirs. Theirs is like a, you know, like a John Donne one, because they don't do a proper job how to maintain the cemetery. So alhamdulillah, Islamic Burial Council was born, and that was the purpose. And alhamdulillah, today we got so many cemeteries, and we won't have a shortage because we recycle. If you take Brook Street, we got over 1,500 graves there. We only got like 500, 600 people that has used it in the last 4 to 5 years. Now, that cemetery, if you so recycle, we can put another 1,000 people there. If you go to Red Hill, Mobeni Heights, Amtutagana Township, all our cemetery, plus we got one in the South Coast, we got one in Verulam. That is, the Verulam one is fenced, is done, everything. There's hardly any people buried there. So for us, alhamdulillah, because we recycle, we don't have a problem. But now coming on to the non-Muslim. Now, non-Muslim cemetery, they got a massive problem because they got 54 cemeteries the city has got. Every single one is like virtually full. Now, one of the biggest problems that the non-Muslim have, especially, as you said, the Xhosa, Zulu culture, and the Shembe community, they only believe in burying. And when they bury Molana, they don't recycle. They can't recycle like that. If you put in one grave, they will make sure that you must not recycle that grave there, because they are saying that you are now disturbing the ancestors. They can kill you for that. That's how bad it is. And I've seen it over and over. So this is the biggest problem the city has got. And I've been working with the city in cemetery for the last 30 years. We had meetings. I even went to Joburg, Cape Town. We had all the cities from the entire country sitting down together once a year to find a solution. And we told them how we can find a solution. They did absolutely nothing. From 2018, they have earmarked, they got special people to go and earmark land. They found about 10 land, and from the 10, they earmarked about 4, because the others couldn't bury in that land because of the soil content, environment, all that issue you need to take. They've been dragging their feet from, I don't know how many, over 10, 12 years now. Nothing is happening. Now, that is the biggest problem the city is facing at the moment. But alhamdulillah, I'm consulting for the last year. There is a cemetery on the other side of Abzito who's going to be opened sometime in March, April this year. We have got three, this is a private cemetery, by the way. There's 300,000 graves. This is purely for the non-Muslims. It is the biggest cemetery in Africa, third biggest in the world. That's how big that cemetery is. It's 2.8 million square meters, the land alone is. Everything has been done. Environment is done. Due diligence is done. Soil test is done. Water content is done. Every single thing has been done. So they are cutting ground as of next week sometime, and they're going ahead to put that cemetery. There is, you see, what is also happening, there's a lot of private cemeteries springing up. Now, if you go to Hillcrest, there's a cemetery called Lala Gashle. In Zulu, Lala Gashle is sleeping. You sleep well. So if you have to go and bury there in that Lala Gashle cemetery, you'll pay 45,000 rand for only the burial. That's the grave. They sell you the grave for 45,000. Then you pay. And that too, your lifespan of that is 15 years. And then you have to renew. And then again, they'll renegotiate how much you have to pay. And then you also pay about 200 rand or so for maintenance every month. This is how it actually works. So there is a massive, massive shortage because of the black community. They do not recycle. That is the problem they are faced with. The city can't do anything at the moment. Their hands are tied. They're looking left, right, and center. It will take them another year, 2 years. Even if they find the site, the soil content won't be right because you need water, you need sunlight, you need the soil must have salt in it for decomposition. Otherwise, you will have a problem where you want to put a body where it's got clay, there is not enough soil salt content in it. You will find after a year and a half, 2 years, that body is still intact. That's how it's, Molana.
You know, many years ago, Brother Azim Baks, alayhi rahmatullah, was talking about reopening the cemetery at Loon Road. You know, because here Browns Avenue and Kenilworth Road at that time was getting a bit, you know, falling short of space. Now, is there a Muslim cemetery also in Loon Road? And is there any, you know, talk about reopening that cemetery?
Before I left about 4 years now, Islamic Burial, to join council and do more council work, at that time, I've already negotiated, and that cemetery, there is a Muslim section in Loon Road. It's the bottom end of, if you go into the cemetery, it's right in the bottom. It is in the plan. In fact, I got the plan as well. I've given it to Islamic Burial Council. They have got the plan. It is an area is already earmarked for us. We can bury there. And it is in our books already at Islamic Burial Council. So if anyone wants to be buried there, that, okay, it needs to be done up like how we got Brook Street, Mobeni, all our other cemeteries. It has to be, some money has to be spent to make sure we get it fenced. Because in terms of Sharia law, we have to, any of our Muslim cemeteries, if you are journeying anything with a non-Muslim, ours must be barricaded. And that portion of land where the cemetery is Yema for us, we have to fence it and then get it done. And it's really, it is in the heart of Overport as well, you know, in Sherwood. So that cemetery is available for us.
Now, coming to our politics, there's something about grant in aid that is, you know, mentioned in the municipality's website. The Itikweni municipality is currently reviewing its grant in aid policy and is inviting you to make comments. The draft grant in aid policy can be viewed, and they give the website, you know, www.durban.gov.za. under documents. And now, can you just elaborate, what is this grant in aid about?
See, Molana, what happened in government? One, if you've got a disaster in like how we had 22 disaster in Durban, or you got looting or whatever it is, the national government get involved immediately. So they say to the city, we must make an application to the national government to say, you know what, we got a massive disaster of flooding in the 22 flooding we had, and last year we had the tornado. So when you have things like that, then you ask national government for granting aid, so they will give the city. Or you also can, the assistance can come from the provisional government, they give the city, and then that money is being utilized to assist the community to get the roofs done or get the roads done or the piping was washed away or whatever happened. Whatever money comes, it has to be utilized mainly for the disaster management. That is granting aid. Then the other granting aid is that, you know, for university, you'll see in the websites also that if you want for university or you got a degree, that we got bursaries from the council, that you apply and that granting aid, that's no payback. Granting aid is no payback. Like if you go to IDC, that's a national government body, you go to them and you want to put up a factory, a block-making factory. Now, you do your proposal, you do your full research due diligence, you submit it to them. So what and they will ask you, how much are you bringing in? So you will tell them, okay, I'm investing in this project. There's my proposal. I'm putting in 500,000. Then what IDC will do, they will give you granting aid of another 500,000 for working capital, working capital. And they'll give you a further 500,000 on a loan basis if you want to expand it for future. So that type of agreement they normally put. The granting aid, you don't pay back. The loan, you will pay back with interest. That's how they work. So this is the two components, how it actually works.
Our next issue is quite a serious issue. You know, it's about dumping sewage. And from what the article states, it's dumping sewage by municipal workers. And we had a representative of the municipality that is that actually made a statement. It must also be noted that some contractors wear municipal branded overalls and their trucks, vehicles bear the municipality logo. Therefore, without the full names and surnames of the people in the video, there was a video that was spread on social media about this dumping of sewage waste. As she was saying, therefore, without the full names and surnames of the people in the video or a vehicle registration number bearing an NDM number plate, it is difficult to conclude that the people seen in the alleged video are indeed staff employed by Itikweni Municipality, she said. Now, is it true that private contractors are allowed to wear municipal overalls and use the logo of the new municipality on the vehicles?
All right. Manana, what you have just mentioned, you've got two questions. One, whether a private contractor can and his staff can wear the municipal uniform. And the second question is, if the vehicle can have a logo. The first question I must answer you, Bonana, is the private contractor cannot wear anything to do with the uniform, cannot use municipal uniform. That's number one. It cannot happen. Number two, the vehicle that he uses, Bucky, he will have a sticker on it. He's a contractor. It says very, very clearly, he's a contractor for the municipality and he will have a logo. So that, in other words, gives him access. Say if the pipe is burst in your road and the meter is affected in your property inside. So if he comes with that, he will show you his card. He's a contractor for the municipality and he's working here. When he shows you that, then only you will open the gate and say, okay, fine, fix it. And you know there's a massive leak here. He will do that. And that's when, otherwise you won't allow him to come into your premises because he's got no identification. He's just got his only ID that he's contracted to the municipality. The vehicle doesn't say, he doesn't have a sticker or anything. Yeah, it's a proper sticker on both the doors of his vehicle stating that I am contracted to the municipality for if he'll tell you electricity, light, water, sewage, whatever it is, it'll stay on that sticker. That's how it is.
What is worrying is that on this occasion, the person was caught by a member of the public. Now, you know, this creates the impression that this has been happening or this did happen before. It was just, we'll say, unfortunate or fortunate for the public that this person was caught out. You know, is there a possibility that this isn't the first time?
Well, Anna, first and foremost, by the Rosal issue, I've seen the video, I think, more than one time. And I know, in fact, immediately I made a call to water and sanitation, who I know personally there, and I said, what is happening? He said, you know what, Farooq, I have already got about 30 calls, and you have also brought it to my attention. They immediately suspended that company, like suspended from the day that when the video clip went out to the community. So that whole team is suspended. That's number one. Secondly, he had no right to take from Stingo and come and dump it in Reservoir Hills. So that's number two. So what happens is, you see, this, they work in cahoots with the bosses and everything. They also get commission. The more the work they push per day, the company makes money, and then the company normally offers the driver or something, you, the more you do, I will keep you, I'll advance you commission. So that's what they do. So what they do is they go and dump anywhere and all that. Now, this is a massive, big problem. And this is where we are staying. And the provincial government have taken a decision. In fact, if you read in the last 2 days television, as well as the press article, the premier of cases has made up his mind already. They are insourcing. Now, what we are going to do, what we are doing is, when we bring in source, then we're in control of our own destiny. This giving out work to private contractors is causing a massive problem for us. Huge problem. Previously, the city had everything of its own. Plumbers, everybody has gone. All our top artisans have gone, because now because now when you give it outsourced, everybody is making money. You know, the officials and everyone were making money out of it. So we got up. You know, I sit in the public accounts committee, and this thing come unfruitful, and you know, the fruitful expenditure. I'm sitting this week Thursday, and I have already got the minutes of it, and there's about 8 or 9 pages that, you know what, we paid the contractor. The contractor haven't done the job. So why? How the systems? We are asking the council. If I gave it to Bonana's company to do the plumbing in Asheville, who went and checked before the last payment was done? Because you can't just give them full advance and then they see the work was only half done. So that's where our biggest problem is, Bonana. So we're tightening all that from last year, you know, since the 24 election. We started closing all the gaps. Now, that's where our biggest leakage is the officials in the council, in the government. That is our leakage. You get rid of them, we can clean the city up, because everybody is working in cahoots, and now they are getting caught. Now, with the new judgment has come through, and it went through also in the, it'll get debated in constitutional court, but I can't see it go there because that thing is watertight. If you are an official, and if you done anything wrong, you are responsible for it now, and his whole team will be responsible. So that's what we have implemented. So now, for somebody to put his foot wrong is going to be very, very hard, because they personally want to be liable for whatever wrongdoing. So that is a good thing that has been, that judgment has come through, that will assist the community. Now at least we'll get more accountability.
Now, our last issue for the morning. We know that President Cyril Ramaphosa established the Itikweni Working Group, which is known as PEWG, in April 2024. Now, this committee, as you know, it is mentioned, is a multi-stakeholder mechanism crafted to address critical service delivery, infrastructure, and socio-economic challenges within the Itikweni Metropolitan Municipality, with the goal of positioning the city as an investment and tourist hub. It operates across three spheres of the government and includes representatives from the private sector and labor. Now, regarding this PEWG, can you give us a report on this? What progress they have they made since April 2024?
Well, this whole structure was actually put in, for in other words, to do an entire city due diligence. Now, they will now report directly, not to the province, but report to Ramaphosa personally. Because if you see over the years, what happened is, we're not getting what tourists we used to get from international tourists coming into the city, because the city infrastructure is completely has fallen apart. Now, the other factor, Ramaphosa is a very sharp guy, put it in place, because 18 months from now is election. 2026 is the municipal election. So, and they're going, at the moment they're sitting in a council, the biggest council here, the Metro Council, sitting with 94 seats. They're not going to get 94 seats in the 2026 election, and they are worried at the moment. They don't know what to do. So therefore, he has started the ball rolling from last year to make sure to get this whole city right and up and running, to show the people that, you know what, we have done work. This is the work where we were, and this is where I brought it to win the votes now. That is one of the things. And the biggest thing is, international companies are pushing a lot of pressure. They are putting a lot of money into the city here, and nothing is happening. They're not getting returns, and a lot of them are taking the investment back. But on the flip side, a lot of people, because the city is broken at the moment, and they are finding that this has an opportunity to invest. You know, when the country is down, that's when they do much investment, because the upswing is coming. It'll turn its corner. That's one thing for granted. You know, I've been in a lot of countries in the world. And then when you drive through from Amstranga, when you come from the from airport through Amstranga, you'll see, as soon as you touch like Blue Lagoon, when you see all the containers and all, you'll ask yourself, what a beautiful beach. And it's looking like a jondol with all these containers and all. Now, if you take the same thing, if you go to Qatar or you go to Dubai, and there was no proper beach and everything there, and how they have put it together. Our whole city can be done like that. And it's just going and seeing other countries and coming and putting it together. What happened? People were looting, the officials there in the city were looting. They gave it to a Malaysian company. Nothing happened. How many years ago? So even in the Point Waterfront, it's been like, it's like, so I can show you agreement. If you want to do something there, you have to contact those Malaysian guys then and pay them. But yet they haven't paid the city full for what investment they're supposed to have done. So this is the problem we are facing, Mullah.
Jazakumullah for your contribution this morning, as we have come to the end of the time that has been allocated. May Allah Azza wa Jalla reward you for your time and the information that you have cascaded to the public. Insha'Allah, you will get the podcast during the course of the day. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.